looking forward tomorrow, House Oversight Committee hearing, as Michael Cohen going to testify, evidently claiming he's going to provide evidence of criminal conduct by Trump as president. Not the old stuff, not where the bodies are buried, not digging stuff out of the closet, but evidently claiming that he's going to bring in some recent stuff. I did find it interesting, though, that Sarah Huckabee Sanders used three words I generally use for Trump: disgraceful, liar, and pathetic, in the same kind of sentence when going after Michael Cohen. But after all, what else do they have? Not a lot. And here to share some thoughts, not just on Cohen, but this whole mess that we find ourselves in. I've asked our good friend Sarah Kendzior to come talk with us. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So disgraced, liar, pathetic. That's pretty much the administration.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that can really describe a lot of people. It's hard to think of who that does not describe. So
what are we expecting from Cohen tomorrow? Evidently, the claim is he's going to have evidence of criminal conduct during the administration.
Hey, you don't say. I mean, so do I. Like, who doesn't? Who in America doesn't have evidence of criminal conduct in this administration? Like, Trump has admitted to criminal conduct multiple times. They've committed, you know, reprehensible actions, constitutional violations, emoluments violations, abuse of migrants, obstruction of justice, and plain sight. So I guess, you know, Cohen has his specific claims about, payouts to porn stars done with campaign money, I believe, which in the grand scale of things seems not that large. But, you know, Capone went to jail on tax evasion, so you never know. I mean, I don't know, though. Like, my hopes are not high for this. I feel like Cohen has successfully recast himself as a victim instead of a perpetrator. This is a guy who has been involved with the Russian mafia since birth. You know, he was born into a crime family. That's not his fault. It is his fault that he continued to commit crimes, for this organization with people like his childhood friend, Felix Sater. And then, you know, the list of crimes that Cohen has been involved in, you know, fraud and money laundering and campaign finance violations and his taxi medallion company and threatening people and, you know, improper use of NDAs. And I mean, it goes on and on and on. And people are forgetting this because they see him as either, you know, the great hope that will bring Trump down, and given the past, assumptions about others, I'm not so confident of that. And of course, today, because of Matt Gaetz, they see him as a victim, as somebody who has been threatened via Twitter by a congressman. You know, maybe it is, witness tampering, whether you like Cohen or not, that is true. But I just, my sympathy is low. Back in 2015, Cohen was threatening physical violence towards journalists. So it's kind of remarkable to see this little, like, oh, Cohen, you know, poor little Cohen, I hope he tells the truth. It's like, where have you been? You know what I mean? Like, where have you been the last, like, 4 years?
Well, I have no sympathy for him whatsoever. So you gave him a little bit. I have none whatsoever, because you're right. Look, I remember, you know, all of the stories of the fixer and the strong arm. So this, oh, how the mighty hath fallen kind of scenario. And look, he's getting his comeuppance.
Yeah, I mean, he should be in jail. He should have been in jail 2 decades ago. He's yet another example of somebody who should have been incarcerated when I was, like, in elementary school, like him, Manafort, Stone, Trump. They've been doing this forever. And, you know, now he's made a deal and he's supposed to go to jail for 3 years. I don't know if that will actually happen. I just hope that what he does tomorrow is bring something useful to the broader scope of what the Trump organization has been doing, because of course he's integral to that, as well as the campaign. And then the real test, of course, comes with, you know, well, will Congress act on this? Because Congress has had, you know, many, many cases of crimes committed by both Trump and other officials in the Trump administration, like Kushner, for example, or Ivanka, or Jeff Sessions. You know, they all committed crimes. The only one that actually left the administration for that reason was Flynn. So, you know, it's really, they're long overdue to act on it. I'm still doubtful that that will happen because of the GOP domination of Congress and the Senate. But, you know, who knows? They're in an odd position because of Cohen, you know, with the little remarks. I'm trying to figure out, like, how WWF this is and if Cohen has actually turned or if this is yet another scenario like Manafort or Papadopoulos where they're just bullshitting and they're just, you know, trying to gin up sympathy and trust that is unearned. So, you know, I'm watching this somewhat skeptically, but I guess with, you know, the curiosity everyone else has.
Yeah, I want to see the train wreck like everyone else. But as I said, I have no sympathy for him whatsoever. And again, he's a lawyer, a Trump lawyer, kind of a, you know, mobbed up lawyer. So I don't know if I believe anything that comes out of his mouth whatsoever. So it's one of those situations where you better bring some actual proof and we better be able to verify it for us to believe any of it other than it's just all bull.
Yeah, I mean, the issue of Cohen's own lawyer, of Lanny Davis, is a weird one that hasn't really been explored. You know, he's the lawyer for a key member of the Russian mafia, Dmitry Firtash. And so he's representing, you know, the mob that Trump and all of his cronies have been working for, you know, people like, you know, Oleg Deripaska. It's the same general circle of, you know, white collar criminals / mafioso / oligarchs, you know, whatever you want to call them. It's the same group. That's his lawyer, Mikhail. He's representing Michael Cohen, who's been like up in this shit for 40 years. And so it's sort of like, is there not a conflict of interest there? Like, is this really like who we're going to put our trust in? Like, what is Lanny Davis doing? Like, and hardly anyone writes about this. I don't know if they don't know. I mean, it's out in the public domain. This is not like a rumor I heard or something. And, you know, that's kind of strange to me because I would think if anything, like say even Davis is going in this with, you know, just the best interest and just trying to represent his clients, like the mob is going to use this fact that he is getting, you know, privileged exclusive information from multiple parties related to their financial affairs. They are not going to want those affairs messed with. So this just, you know, all around seems like a very bad idea. And I'm kind of surprised no one's brought that up.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, with all the mob ties and all this stuff, I'm actually shocked that Cohen's talking because, yeah. You know, you're going to prison, buddy. You might not make it out.
I just can't tell because, you know, I did wonder, okay, is he a flight risk? Is he an assassination risk? You know, those are plausible things. But then you see pictures of him out and about. He's like, oh, I can't testify. I have a shoulder injury or I'm sick or I've been threatened or my family's been threatened. And then he's at some like swanky restaurant shaking hands with people with his allegedly injured shoulder. Like you can see him moving it like in the photos. And, you know, people are taking pictures of him like it's a paparazzi thing, you know, which is another gross kind of outcome of this whole affair, is that people have begun treating, you know, Cohen and Manafort and, you know, even kind of like lower level people, Papadopoulos, they get excited when they see them. Like it's, you know, a freaking celebrity. It has a sort of like 1930s gangster vibe. It's like, this is not exciting. You know, these people are destroying our country. These are people who've been involved in murders and crimes and economic crimes that have affected the daily lives of Americans. They have helped put Trump into office. Like Trump, who is behaving like an autocrat, who is a white supremacist, who is snatching kids, you know, away from their parents, doing these really vile things. Like there's nothing amusing or cool or sort of like dangerous in an exciting way about this. This is just purely dangerous. These are terrible people who should have been locked up for the good of public safety. And hopefully people will remember that tomorrow, but I kind of doubt they will, you know, just kind of like looking at how the coverage goes, but
yeah, I mean,
hopefully they will.
No, you're right. It's scary. And, you know, I talked with somebody yesterday who wrote a piece about apathy and, you know, how, you know, we're just now kind of, you know, there isn't the mass freak out that I was expecting over this national emergency, because I think we're getting to that point to where, you know, all of this overreach and all of this insanity and all of this chaos is now becoming, well, part of the norm. And instead of, you know, being, you know, in the streets and, you know, panicking, we're just kind of like, well, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say panicking. I've been vigilant, like I've been on guard for like many, many years. This is just sort of a heightened state of that. You know, in terms of the national emergency, I think because Trump has simultaneously, you know, invented a national emergency, which we all know is not real. There's no, like, migrant hordes pouring over the border with Hezbollah members inside. Like, this is just crap. But, you know, it gives him powers that he wouldn't have in a regular situation. Like, he can, you know, bring troops out into the streets. He can freeze people's personal bank accounts. He can cut off the internet. Like, these are actual powers that he can have, you know, as president through declaring a national emergency. And I think people have kind of forgotten this because now he's out planning, like, 4th of July parties and stuff. And so they're like, oh, you know, national emergency, whatever. This is only the second time in U.S. history that a president has invoked military force as an option in a national emergency. The only other time a president has done this was 9/11. So that is what is on the table. And, you know, they are sitting. I don't think this is like some genius plan of Trump, but I think it may well be a plan of somebody in the GOP, you know, one of his more astute advisors. They will use that weapon when they feel that it's necessary. And if this national emergency goes on forever, we may have a problem. You know, if there are protests about other issues, that might be when he declares, oh, this is too much civil unrest, and releases the troops. You know, those are the sort of scenarios that are going through my mind. I hope that they're going through the minds of Congress as well. I hope they are able to actually kind of, you know, nip this in the bud in the court system. Trump kind of, I think, accurately described what will probably happen, which is it'll get shut down a bunch of times until it goes to the Supreme Court, in which, you know, they'll hold it up because he packed that court with Kavanaugh. That's why that was so dangerous. And so that's frustrating, you know, in a sense. I do feel like we're on borrowed time, you know, a little bit, and that's why it was necessary. I've been staying on your show for 2.5 years for them to get these guys early before they're able to entrench themselves and do things like pack the courts. But we have now, you know, passed the Rubicon or whatever at this point, and so I don't know what to say.
No, I've been, you know, I've been hoping for a while that, you know, Mueller would come through with something, and here we're still waiting. And now we find out, you know, evidently Rosenstein is saying that, you know, if there are indictments, yes, but, you know, we may not find out what all of the other actors did if they're not indicted.
Yeah, see, I don't trust him at all, and I have not trusted him from the start. And the more he opens his mouth and talks out of both sides of it, the less I trust him. And so, you know, he's trying to play both sides of this game. I don't think he's some secret white knight. He was in on a lot of stuff, like the firing of Comey. He doesn't seem particularly unnerved that Trump has, you know, united with a transnational crime syndicate. When he was talking today about how we can't just go around, you know, accusing innocent Americans as members of the Justice Department, basically referring, you know, to all the potential indictees or people like Manafort in Trump's fold that are very obvious criminals. I was like, so this is who you give the benefit of the doubt to? Like, you know, your Justice Department, which doesn't care if there's, like, you know, people going to jail for completely nonviolent crimes because they're black and poor or something like that. Like, you're totally fine smearing them, you know, having headlines about just everyday people who, you know, made some sort of error in judgment that really didn't affect many people. But when we have an actual issue of treason and of, you know, brutal criminals taking the helm of the executive branch, that's when you're going to be like, oh, you know, let's not, like, say anything too strong. It's like, oh, come on. And maybe it's because of the danger of the situation. Maybe he doesn't want to push anyone's buttons because, you know, Trump might literally push a button, like a nuclear button, and blow something up in retaliation. But the fact that we're in that situation where everyone's kind of tiptoeing around, like, oh, he might start a war if we piss him off. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get how people aren't, like, you know, freaking out about that. Like, we have a nuke-bearing sociopath with sadistic intent. Like, you gotta get him out. Invoke the 25th. Do what you need to do. But, I mean, for God's sake, like, you know, you can't... We're lucky that we're still alive at this point. We're lucky that we still have a semi-democracy. But it's not gonna last forever. And they really need to, like, ensure some kind of, you know, pathway out of this. Because it's not just gonna happen on its own.
And you bring up, you know, pushing the button. And, you know, look, I'm watching what's going on with Iran and all of the messages that's coming out of that. You know, you've got John Bolton, who, you know, has been wanting to bomb Iran for years. I see that being the, you know, them setting the table for that being the scenario.
Yeah, they want to nuke Iran. They all have for a long time. That's, like, been Bolton's dream for 15 years. You know, it's something that Trump, and various lackeys, Kushner, especially in his administration, want. Netanyahu certainly wants, and he's now become even more right-wing in Israel, basically kind of uniting with a fascist element, and expanding his own party that way. There are many people who want that. What I kind of feel is that they're, going like super Reagan administration. It's like they want to relive Iran-Contra, but on like really broad, really powerful ways. I'm wary of what's going on in Venezuela and how they're going to exploit that. I don't know what the hell they're doing in North Korea, but I know that Trump, cozying up to Kim Jong-un and saying things like, some children of, rich and powerful families end up screwed up, but not you. It's like, the guy, killed his uncle and his half-brother. Like, what's your standard of screwing up, Donald Trump? Yeah. I mean, maybe that was, a slam on Donald Jr. That's distinctly possible. Nonetheless, he's the president, and that's sort of like a blip on the radar today. Like, that barely made the news. I mean, this is so, just talking about it, it's so bad. And people really, I don't know, I feel like they cling to stuff like 2020 and the election because they just want to, talk about some normal people for a while. Like, whatever you think of all the Democrats, that comparatively, they are, likable and of sound mind. But, I mean, they're not going to have a chance in hell to win if the system can't uphold. And that's the thing that I'm concerned about.
No, I'm right there with you. Absolutely. But the whole thing with little Kim there, I'm concerned that our con man isn't as good as their con man, and we end up with the short end of the stick. Because look, this is a guy who, the reports are that he was executing people with a flamethrower. This is not a good guy.
No, I mean, and he's not stupid. I think that people thought he was because he's like a young, kind of funny-looking guy, and it's an insular society, and people just kind of have this assumption that because North Korea itself as a country is insulated from the world, as in, its citizens can't access information or leave or criticize or anything, that, Kim Jong-un is too, but that's not true. This is an internationally educated guy. He seems very adept at manipulating Trump. He seems to enjoy manipulating Trump, and I don't know exactly what Trump's attraction to him is and how real it is, or whether it's sort of being, massaged by third parties. I think Putin is interested in how this relationship is developing, but he does like strong men. He likes people who kind of want to play his war games and maybe be on the same side. I think when he sees anyone with nuclear weapons, it's an instant attraction. I mean, that's sort of like, his ultimate fetish. Like, you go back into the 80s in the rapturous way Trump talks about using nuclear weapons and controlling nuclear weapons. Like, he's wanted in on this for a long time. And so I think that's kind of at the heart of it, is he likes that North Korea, won't be told what to do and is, dangerously toying with the annihilation of the world. Like, that's an attractive quality to him. But, we have to live in this world that these two lunatics are, giving an existential threat to, which is an unpleasant experience.
I would, you think? Unpleasant?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Nuclear winter, that just unpleasant.
Huh?
Having a nuclear winter, a little unpleasant.
Yeah, just a little inconvenience for us all. I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at that. I'm looking at climate change. I'm just like, if it's not going to be one, it's going to be the other. Unless, we really work hard and turn things around. I feel like I have to throw that in there for the listeners that are out, getting ready to jump off a cliff or something, listening to me. I do think it is possible for things to change. It's not going to happen on its own. Like, if the arc of the world bends to justice, it's going to have to be millions and millions pushing it with all they got, because it is not bending that way now. And I do worry that people have become complacent. I'm worried that even people in Congress don't seem to fully grasp the urgency of the situation, even though we're 2 years in. Initially I was like, okay, I get why some of you don't believe me about Trump and Russia and Manafort and all these criminals. I was thinking, you're going to learn this the hard way, but you will learn it, and maybe you'll act then. But instead, it's like, I don't know, I think they're so afraid of speaking plainly to the public about it, because they, I'm not going to say they're complicit, but, they weren't on top of things. People were not on top of things during the Obama era. The FBI certainly failed us in, you know, nearly every respect. And so if they are going to, you know, tackle this in a forthright way, they also need to criticize themselves. And I think some people just simply have too much pride to do that. And that's a shame. You know, that hurts everybody.
I hope that that's what this is. And I hope it isn't that the Russians have bought so much of our political system that it's both sides of the aisle who are in the back pocket.
I think it's mostly the Republicans, you know, in the back pocket. I don't really see it as much in the Democrat side. Like but one of the things I worry about is something like an external threat, you know, which I've mentioned before, an infrastructure hack, the threat of nuclear weapons, something that would keep, you know, Democrats in line, keep them from pursuing meaningful action, particularly on anything related to their finances. But, you know, I often see a kind of cluelessness occasionally among some members and, you know, some strange decisions. They just don't strike me as bought. They strike me as timid and showing poor judgment at times, but it's quite different than what I'm seeing in, like, Mitch McConnell or Lindsey Graham or others. And, you know, with certain agencies, whether the Treasury or, you know, the FBI, like, I think that those agencies have been co-opted to an extent. Not everyone in there, but, you know, there's clear signs of infiltration. Like, we know the Treasury was infiltrated by the Russians in 2015. It seems pretty clear that at least the New York branch of the FBI was co-opted, probably with the influence of Giuliani. And we saw exceptionally strange behavior from Comey, you know, who is lionized as this hero and really shouldn't be. You know, in my mind, he's still one of the people who caused this. And we haven't had any hearings really into that, you know. No one's looking into these failures of law enforcement and intelligence. And it kind of reminds me of 9/11 and the aftermath of that. And, you know, these redacted reports, these independent commissions that really did not get to the bottom of things in a way that was satisfactory to the American public. And this is much more opaque because it's an ongoing investigation. And it's, you know, it's an attack from within. That's what makes it so insidious. And that's what makes it so difficult for people to speak in a forthright way and kind of identify people in our own country as enemies of our country. But, you know, what Trump is, you know, he is an enemy of the United States. It's what Manafort is. He literally, you know, committed conspiracy against the United States. And so, you know, people unfortunately do need to think of it in those terms because those are the stakes. You know, this is hurting everyone, you know, not just the people they threaten directly. It is threatening every citizen through his rule.
Yeah, and the thing is that gets me is there's part of me that thinks that, you know, we're never going to really get the absolute truth because, well, you know, to steal the Jack Nicholson line, we can't handle the truth.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can handle the truth, so they can tell me. I mean, in many ways, I feel like the truth is in the public domain. It's out there, and it's just a matter of piecing it together. And if you follow this stuff obsessively for a number of years and, like, combine that with archives, combine that with, you know, the biographies of various individuals and a knowledge of world affairs, you know, you can piece together a lot of this. You can certainly piece together enough of it to know that it's a severe problem that needs to be handled by law enforcement because it's a public safety issue. It's not about vengeance or partisanship or anything like that. It's a matter of public safety that people like Manafort and Jared Kushner and Roger Stone are behind bars so that they can't threaten people and so they can't jeopardize national security and they can't engage in, you know, worldwide money laundering schemes that affect the entire international economy, you know, things like that. I do think that there, you know, folks will freak out and do freak out when the facts are presented to them in that blunt kind of a manner. But I guess the one advantage, if there is such a thing, of having Trump is that he, you know, he does this very overtly. He blurts all this stuff out. I mean, they all kind of do as a way of flaunting power. But with Trump, it's a little different because he's just, you know, pathological. Like he has a, you know, a narcissistic kind of disorder. And I think his mental condition may be deteriorating. And so he's just blurting stuff out all over the place. And, you know, the most damning thing is about, you know, the case are his own words. And I think that in a sense that makes it easier because you can show someone who's kind of maybe reluctant to believe things, you know, something that Trump said that was incriminating. And their only question then becomes, well, okay, you know, if that is really a crime, like admitting obstruction of justice on TV or asking for Hillary Clinton's emails at a press conference, you know, to get them from Russia, well, then their question always is, well, why is no one doing anything? Like, if this is serious, someone would do something. And, like, I'm always stuck with, it's really, really serious, and no one is doing anything, and that itself is serious as well. And that's the second question that we have to get to the bottom of. And it's one of the most frustrating questions for me, because people have a choice to make, and it's maybe not, like, the easiest choice in the world. It's not the easiest job in the world to take these people to task, but they just seem to want to take, I don't know, a way that's easier for themselves. It makes them comfortable, makes their donors comfortable, makes their little bubble world comfortable. And I'm sorry, this is a very uncomfortable situation for anyone who's, you know, not so elite, not breathing that rarefied air. And those are the citizens of the United States, and that's who's owed an explanation, and that's who's owed justice.
I'm with you. Let me change gears a little bit. North Carolina's 9th Congressional District, Harris, the Republican who claimed he won, all the shenanigans there, he stepped aside. He's endorsed this stony rushing guy. Any thoughts on the fact that, you know, this didn't sneak by as I think a lot of people thought it was going to?
Yeah, I mean, it's bad that this situation existed, but, you know, we have seen these kind of minor victories, and I definitely think people are on guard now against, you know, not just foreign interference in elections, but domestic interference, like obstructionism from the Republicans, cheating, illicit actions. But, you know, on the other hand, you saw what happened to Stacey Abrams in Georgia. You know, that was a very clear-cut case of behavior, you know, that should have never been accepted. Like, she was robbed of that election. So it really varies in terms of results. You know, but yeah, like any kind of accountability, any sense that, like, if people fight back, they can actually get a victory out of things, you know, have their votes be counted, is a good thing. Like, we haven't completely lost our democracy in full, you know, but it is being chipped away at gradually, and it's that kind of vigilance that's necessary to try to keep it intact.
Yeah, I'm happy to see it. I'm also happy to see Boss Hogg is running, because have you seen pictures of this stony Russian guy? He looks like Boss Hogg from the Dukes of Hazzard.
I didn't know. I haven't seen the replacement yet. I've only, like, you know, half been paying attention to that story in the midst of the shit show in which I'm drowning. But, you know, I did see that there was a positive outcome. So I was like, well, that's novel. But, yeah, you know, that's good for North Carolina.
That's new. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. So anything tomorrow, the big spectacle with Cohen, what are you expecting?
I really don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell because I haven't decided if he has legitimately flipped for the side of good. You know, like we were talking about before,
right.
There are many reasons to think he's not, like his lawyer, you know, all of his previous actions in life, like those things all kind of make me a bit suspicious. I'm just hoping that, you know, I'm hoping it happens because it's been postponed so many times. And two, I just hope that, you know, Congress is very thorough and does not hold back in their questions because we really haven't had the level of transparency in these proceedings that I'd hope we would. I mean, it's interesting to me because I feel like in 2017, we had many more hearings like this. You know, we had multiple appearances by Comey, by Jeff Sessions, by other players in this, and since then, basically since the Mueller probe launched, it's been relatively closed, and, you know, Americans are owed this information. So hopefully Cohen will bring it. I'm worried that it's going to kind of ride around this narrative that I'm seeing put out a lot lately, which is that this is just about creating a Trump Tower Moscow, that Trump was not really interested in winning the election, that Cohen was just there to help him on some shady business deals, that this wasn't really a political hijacking of American system by a hostile foreign state and a crime syndicate, which is what it is. And I'm seeing, you know, people who I formerly respected, you know, making those sorts of claims. This whole, oh, of course Trump didn't really want to win kind of nonsense. It's like, oh yeah, Trump set out to lose to a woman and lose to a Clinton and give up power. Like, that sounds so much like Trump. That makes so much sense. I mean, it's just a ridiculous theory. And of course, you know, Trump ran for president 5 times before he finally won, you know, or almost ran in a couple of cases. So it's not like he's some, you know, novice to this this ambition. And I'm worried that that's going to be kind of the line that Cohen takes, because if he wants to protect this whole operation, that's what he's going to say. He's going to make it look like some kind of, you know, money laundering or, you know, porn star threat crime, and not the giant existential threat, not treason, not any of the really severe things about having Trump in office. He may play down those dangers. They cover up crime with scandal, and I worry that that's going to be the tactic that Cohen and his lawyers take, is to make this a scandal instead of a crime. And so I hope people remember that this is a massive crime. I mean, this is like the crime of our country's history.
That's probably the best advice I've heard on watching that tomorrow that I've seen or read. Excellent analysis. Good stuff, Sarah. I appreciate the time. Always great talk with you. I look forward to having you back again.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much. Always good talking to Sarah. And look, this is one of those things where you go, she's absolutely right. Will it be the shiny stuff? Will it be the, you know, the porn star? Will it be the land deal? Will it be that? Or will it actually be focusing on the crimes? We'll see. I'm going to have the popcorn like everybody else. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.